Shia, we were discussing which we've been told on Mach of Eric Kamin Shaila, a woman that is bleeding. We're trying to ascertain where the bleeding came from. So the Gemara tells us that sometimes we can assume, we can align the fact that it probably came from a Macha, different locations where the Macha is exactly, but that Macha is not going to be a problem. The question is, how certain do we have to be? So we spoke about a big machlokes in Rishonim. Must it be a Macha Yadua Shemotzi Dam? Does it have to be a type of Macha that we know for a fact is bleeding? Does it have to be a type of Macha? We don't quite, we're not quite sure that it's bleeding, but we think it may be bleeding. What exactly constitutes a Macha for these purposes? So we spent a lot of time talking about Tzvekis and Tzvekis and a lot of different possibilities. And now we get really to the end of the Sugya. We're going to go back to the beginning of the Sugya for a moment on the page 15. Back to the first of the Mamakam was on page 15, the beginning of the Sugya Sveika. So at the very end of the first Mamakam, Long Shukhanach and Ramah, so the second line to the bottom, at the end of the line, so the Ramah, it goes through all the different possibilities about when you're, what kind of a Maka is, what is a Maka, what's not a Maka. So finally, the Ramah tells us, actually, starts the third line, so the very end of the third line from the bottom. The Ramah gives you two almost yotzim and a klal, two exceptions to the general rules of matzahs. One is the chum and one is the kula. Comes the Ramah at the end of the third month of the bottom, we come up, Bishas Vesta, on the Lamid Yom, the Lamid Yom, Eina Tod Makosa, the Lakayim of the Tamil Yoylam. Says the Ramah, what if a woman has bleeding and we think it's probably coming from a matzah? The only problem is, it happens to also coincide with the time that she's expecting a period. It's called Shas Vesta. So Shas Vesta means that she got last month, she got a period on after 28 days, and the month before after 28 days, and the month before that she got a pattern going. She knows exactly when her period's going to happen. Or even if she doesn't have a established Vesas, she has what's called the Elamid Yoyim, Elamid Yoyim, which we call an Onabedinus. Onabedinus means for a woman who sees sometimes 29, sometimes 31, sometimes 30, sometimes 33, she fluctuates. So we assume that about 30 days, approximately 30 days, we can assume that she's probably going to be seen. So comes the Ramon and says that if a woman has a Maka, but the blood is coinciding with what we were expecting to be a period, so then it's very hard to turn around and call her a Maka. If the Ramon says, Binkain, look, the time of the Yoylam. So then we'll always say every month she's flowing blood, up, no problem, she has a Maka. So you have to be realistic. So again, so and all the kulas that we had about makos in the past, about tzvekis and tzvekis, everything's going to be trumped by the fact that it's what we call Shas Vesta. Then the Ramah turns around with an important kula, and the Ramah says, Uksamim, at the very end of the second line of the bottom, Uksamim tolim b'cholin yon, that if a woman has merely a kesem, namely, she didn't have a flow of blood, and she didn't even find blood on a b'dika cloth, and she didn't find blood if they have a relation, she just found a kesem, she found blood on the underwear, found blood on her body. She found blood as a stain. So going back to what we spoke about the very first shiurim, and back last year, that minhag Torah, the woman just finds a stain in the middle of nowhere. There was no re'iyah, there was no sensation, it wasn't a regular flow of a period. So it's just the kesef was only a problem at the Rabbanan. So since it's only a problem at the Rabbanan, we can be much, much more lenient to be tola on other sources. So even though when it comes to a real re'iyah, she's having a real flow, or she's having blood on a b'dika cloth, which is a chashash of deraisa, or blood b'shas tashmish, which is a chashash of deraisa. When you're dealing with potential re'iyos, then the criteria for what constitutes a makah are very, very high. It has to be a makah yadua shemotzi dam, and maybe it's fake, all different things we spoke about in the last 2 weeks. When it comes to a kesef, kesef is a rabban anyway. But some of them can be so lenient, even though it's not even a makah yadua shemotzi dam, we're not even sure what it is. Doesn't matter if there's any degree of realistic chance that's coming from somewhere else, so we have a right to remake it, since it's only a kesem anyway.
Even at the normal time?
If things get normal, then things get more complicated. But the Shas Vesta, things are more complicated. Right. In the middle of the month, all of a sudden you see some start of something. The source for this Ramah is actually a Mishnah in Maseches Nida, but the Mishnah quotes the famous story about Rabbi Akiva. We spoke about this Mishnah already last year, and we introduced some. The Mishnah tells the story of Hasnida, that a woman once came with a kesem to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva asked her, "Do you have a makah?" So she said, "I had a makah a while ago, but I think it healed." So Rabbi Akiva pushed her a little bit, and he said, "No, no, well, is it a type of mapa that could have possibly, resurfaced, reopened? So he said, it could be. So he said, fine, Torah, it's Mutaris. And the Mishnah tells us that the Talmidim, when they saw that conversation, they overheard that conversation, so how you, Tameyans of Azel, Talmidim were looking at each other, what did he just say? The Rebbe was just so making, he put words into the woman's mouth. He told her that she had a mapa. What's going on? So Rabbi Akiva turned to the Talmidim and said, don't worry. He said, I know what I'm doing. He said, Dam lo kesem. Since the din is that min haTorah, some of them don't apply. The whole thing, l'abracham l'adavar l'hakel, it says, Chachamim were the ones who instituted the Takana of Ksamim. Built into the Takana of Ksamim was the fact that as long as you have any tliya whatsoever, it's good enough. So even though that type of a tliya wouldn't have sufficed for a shah of a deraisa, because she doesn't even know that she has a tliya anymore, we can look the other way for some derabon. That's what the Ramos based on, that we have a right to be very, very makil. The criteria of makos are much less fixamen.
Wouldn't the placement of the statement of the Ramah indicate that it's even b'shas vesa?
You mean that kesef here means you could even be makil? It's a shayla. Shayla had to read it. I mean, that last Ramah, they're going about every single thing under the sun. Yeah, it could be. It could be. That's true. Practically speaking, we're very nervous to be making with something b'shas vesa, but maybe you're right. So the question is, just how far does this kula of some total of a whole Indian? Every single case under the sun, we're making like some, but she at least have to know that she has a macha. What if she doesn't know she has anything? A woman comes with the kesef, and the rabbi asks her, so do you have a macha? No. Do you think maybe I have a macha? No, I don't have a macha. We'll be told by the chalim, there's nothing to be told of. So what if we're not quite sure that she has a macha, but she has some kind of discomfort. She has some pain inside, which, again, nobody saw that she has a macha. She doesn't have documented that she has a macha. But we suspect that maybe she has a macha. Is the discomfort enough of a tolum of a chol inyan as well? So that was a big machlekes haposkim. If we take a look at the top of page 16, the Padi HaShulchan, the contemporary sefer, quotes from machlekes acharonim. I'm able to read the small print. And Maramachim, top of page 16, Maramachim number 5, so the Padi HaShulchan quotes the following question. Because of an age of Yehuda, the isha she'ein l'macha yedua, if a woman doesn't even have a macha yedua, she doesn't even know for a fact that she has any wound there. But by geshes ke'ev the gufa, she feels a pain. Yechol mitlos kispa b'ke'ev ahu lomar shekoyv l'machas macha. That even though nobody told her, she didn't go to the doctor, nobody saw macha, just the fact that she has discomfort in that area, that's enough. We met a bohadam in the eshta vestas kavua matzikes shlobishas vesta. A little throwback to what we said before. When she finds the kesef and shlobishas vesta, okay, nishkefelach. So then he skips down to the next line. The eshta harbazem elosh sefer trumas. He quotes that from the rishonim who don't seem to have this lash. Other rishonim seem to say that there's a limit. I can't believe yosef to be toila on a maka, even though it's a half baked maka without even shorts motzidam that mela. But to be told on a cave and just mere discomfort, that maybe is a little bit too far. So that's a big machlekes in the poskim, just how far do we have a right to be making. This man hazeh, this shayla is probably a moot shayla for the following zin, which is really going to lead us into the next one. This man hazeh, what if she doesn't know if she has a macha? Or the doctor, take a look and tell you whether you have a macha or not. So the doctor will examine you and see you have a macha. Good, then you have a macha. Forget this man hazeh. The makas that we have is manazah. They're not makas in your douche, mozi down. They're always going to be mozi down. You go to the doctor will touch it a little bit, you'll see that it gets irritated a little bit, it starts to bleed. So if it's manazah, we have an advantage over with Rishonim had, is that we have a much easier way of ascertaining exactly what's going on. So therefore, these shailas of, is there a cave, is there a makas in your douche, mozi down, most of the shahs are not going to be relevant. Usually one trip to the doctor is going to indicate to us, beyond the shadow of a doubt, there's a makas there, it's a makas in your douche, and shall in effect become mutaris.
Would you want to be makel and not go to the doctor in certain cases? Because the system was built not to, it's a general halakha.
The general question, right. But the problem is, if it's so efshel levar b'kal, it's so easy to levar b'zmanazeh, it's hard to close our eyes b'zmanazeh and say, no, we're not going to, it's so easy to tell. So we do send the women to doctors fairly often, whenever these kinds of showers.
Which really, get an appointment for 3 days.
So, Baruch Hashem, in most thriving Jewish communities, we have backup plans for that also. Most communities, the most rabbanim have access to are women who were able to check, the women who were midwives and nurses, who have a system in place to get people checked in an hour. That's usually what ends up happening. So, of course, this leads us really into our next sugya. So we're putting so much faith and trust in the medical profession now, they're going to make or break it in terms of a pasnida. The question is that halachically correct? Is that halachically accurate? Two questions. Do we trust the doctors? And number two, the doctors know what they're talking about. So that opens up for us a whole new sugya, which goes way beyond a pasnida, really becomes the main thrust of our sugya today. Just what credibility do the doctors have in halacha? And there are really two different questions we have to ascertain. We have to, number one, can we assume that even the doctor is a very firm person, a very honest person? Is the doctor have the ability to make such a statement? Is the doctor knowledgeable enough to make such a statement about where the doctor is coming from? And number two, even if the doctor theory is knowledgeable, is the doctor trustworthy? Is there reason to believe that the doctor maybe is not telling us the truth? So those are two different sugyas that are going to overlap and going to become the background for our entire sugya about Ne'emanus HaRofim, which again, touches on Ka'ot HaRakula, but for our purposes we're going to try to focus primarily as it plays out in Chasnida. So before we get to the intricacies of Chasnida, our initial reaction to the sugya is, well, do we trust the doctors or not? So the answer is, of course we trust the doctors. There are Mishnayos in the end of Maseches Yuma, entire sugya is about Hilchos Yom Kippurim, about a person eating on Yom Kippur. The Mishnah says explicitly that if you have a chayla on Yom Kippur and you suspect that he may have to eat, so you ask the doctor tells you he has to eat, so you have to feed him. And the Gemara goes on and explains, even if there are different opinions amongst the doctors, one doctor says he has to eat, one doctor says he doesn't have to eat, so with suffering, you go to kula, you always end up feeding him on Yom Kippur. So isn't that Mishnah, isn't that whole sugya in Yuma a proof positive that we're making on Yisuri Kares in deference to what the doctors are saying? The answer is that doesn't prove anything. All that proves is that the doctors may know what they're talking about. For the purposes of Pikuach Nefesh, we don't have to be certain. We just have to have a latest asofet. So maybe there's a 10% chance the doctor is correct. But for Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh, that's all you need. You need even less than that. Whereas, in order to be modernist of Nida, so we have to have presumably 100%. We have to be certain, or very close to certain, that the doctor knows what they're talking about, and the doctor is telling us the truth. So that Gemara Masechus Yuma was probably not going to prove one way or the other. So we would probably want to look more in the Chasnida, in Maseches Nida, of a case where the doctors are consulted and see what Chazal's approach to the consultation with the doctors is. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Nida, where the Gemara definitely tells us a story about a shah that happened with the doctors were consulted. Unfortunately, it's not clear what the conclusion of the story is. Everything seems to be hinging upon the story, but you can read the story multiple ways. So the Gemara, the sixth of the Ma'amar Kamos, in Maseches Nida, and Nachon Beis and Beis, So Belaz Rabbi Tzadok tells over that there were two stories that his father was the famous Rabbi Tzadok. He appears in the Gemara in Maseches Gittin. He was one of the Tanoim who lived at the time of the Churban. He was the one who fasted all those years. Rabbi Tzadok and the Kamtah Sugyas. He fasted that the Rosh Hashem Rachmanis had not destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. Unfortunately, his fasting didn't succeed. He got very sick, and again the whole story in Maseches Gittin. Rabbi Tzadok, who is a Kohen, so Rabbi Tzadok is telling over a story about his father, that his father brought two shadows from Tivin, Tivin was the place where he lived, Liyavna. At that time already, so the Sanhedrin was no longer in Rishalayim. Right before the Churban, they had already left, and then after the Churban, they traveled to Yavna. So there were two shadows that had come up in Tivin, Rabbi Tzadok's town, and he brought the shadows to the Chacham, to the Sanhedrin in Yavna. Ma'isevi Sha'alai Sama Pelas Kivin Klipos Adumos, that there was a woman who was, she was like having these kind of discharges of klipos adumos. They were like these, like, almost like peels of flesh or something that were red. And the question was, is this blood or is this some other kind of tissue or something? Something that's not halachically blood. In that location, came to ask my father. He's telling about the story. The Abba shol the chachamim. So my father went to the Beis Din HaGadol and he asked the chachamim in Yavna what to do. The chachamim shol the rofim. And at the time, the Chachamim asked the doctors. So you see, right, the doctors were getting involved. So the Amar Lahem, so the Chachamim, so the doctors responded, Isha zu maka yeshto besoch meyeha, she mimena mapelas kimin klipos. So the doctors, the medical response was that this woman has a maka, and it's a maka that's causing these types of discharges. So that sounds like a good thing. It sounds like the doctors are going to be believed. But then the doctor didn't stop at that point. So the sugya doesn't stop at that point. Tatil lemayim im nimochu tmeya. They said that They said that, let's do a test. So it's also not clear who's ordering the test. Is the doctor prescribing the test? Are the chacham prescribing the test? But the test was suggested that we should put these things into water, and if they start to dissolve into water or something, so then that shows that they're more of a blood consistency. If they don't dissolve, so that shows that somehow they're not considered to be a blood, they're more just kind of pieces that are peeling off of that makom. And then we have a similar story, again, a very, very similar story. But once again, there was the Shalai came to Rabbi Tzadok, he went to the Chum went to the doctors, they saved his blood, the doctor said something, and then they ran the test. So the question that's not clear in the Gemara is, if they asked the doctors, and the doctors said what the facts were, so why did they run the experiment for? So did they believe the doctors, did they not believe the doctors? So it's not clear exactly from the Gemara. So there is a Taisus HaRosh. I don't know how anyone's going to be able to read this Taisus HaRosh on the 7th of the Gemara of Kavos, but we'll try to decipher if we can. On the side, on the 7th of the Gemara of Kavos, I think the person who put together these Gemara of Kavos, was read 15 years ago, was put together for younger eyes. It wasn't put together for most of us here. So the Taisus HaRosh, I think the first time I did this shiur, I was able to see them, so things have changed over the years. So the Taisus HaRosh, right, that Amr Isha Zu Machi Isha Zuch Meya Lo Shaya Bor Lerofim Shahaya Lamaka Besach Meya. It's not that the doctors were certain. The Imkain Afilu Mimocha Tahora. If the doctors were really certain that it was a Maka, so what are they wasting time running the test for? It doesn't matter what the test shows up. She's going to be Muteris anyway. If it's a Maka, it's a Maka. So the answer is that they weren't 100% sure. So I feel mocha tahora. They mean liyeh, but rod da machas macha. I feel b'sof mei dusa tahora. Ela omra rofim, ulai isha zu macha yesh lo b'sof mei yeha. They weren't sure that she has a macha. The yibodne kadova yedeh tawas mayim. In the mocha da midu, v'lo ba machas macha. Chelik uvda de shumra. So the Rosh says there were two stages what happened there. They asked the shayla from the doctors, does she have a macha now? The doctor said, yes, she has a macha. And then the chum said, well, that's not enough. Let's run the test anyway. So says it tells the Rosh, why did they
run
the test?
The doctor said, let's run it anyway.
It sounds like he's learned that the chum said, let's run the test.
Okay.
So it tells the Rosh says, if the doctors would have said with certainty, we know for a fact that this woman has a macha, we would have wasted time. We ran the test for the doctor. The basket, which is Mutaris, finished, end of story. So it tells the Rosh says, no, because the doctors themselves weren't sure. So the doctors weren't sure, so then the Chavim ran the backup test to try to give a little bit more a degree of certainty. What's the implication for the Taz HaRosh? That if the doctors would have been sure, they would have said, we know this is a Macha. I'm telling you, it's 100% Macha. They would have been believable. It's a Shaila. Of course, we would have trusted them. One could perhaps learn the Gemara a little bit differently. Maybe you could learn the Gemara that the Chavim are trying to collect all the information. It means they asked the doctors. The doctors told them to put it. Thank you very much. We'll put that into the cheshbon. And now we're going to run our own halachic test also. And we'll get all the information. Then we'll come up with the psach. According to that way of reading the Gemara, even the doctors were swearing, all the doctors were telling you for sure it's a macha. The Chavim were ignoring it. They were listening to it. They were considering it. But they weren't convinced. So depending on how you read this Gemara, either the doctors have an absolute nemanus. The Kuvlani tells us, Rosh is reading it, that if the doctors would have said certainty, with certainty they would have been believed, or maybe you can read the Gemara, that even the doctors were saying with certainty, they still weren't believed.
I think it's clear from the end of the statement by the Gemara doesn't tell you what happens. So by not telling you what happens, if the Gemara was said, and they found it this way, so you can go back to the beginning of the statement, but the fact that it's ambiguous as far as the result, so it really reinforces the statement, no one really knew, because otherwise the Gemara said, and the doctors were right, or the Chachamim were right, and the doctors were wrong. By leaving it ambiguous, it's leaving this statement.
Maybe you're right. So that doesn't sound good for us. That means that we still don't know what the answer is.
Right, but I think by the Gemara is leaving it ambiguous, that's a very powerful statement, because normally it'd say, okay, and they found out that she was, Tahar or Tameh or whatever. The Gemara is telling you two cases without telling you results. Why is it telling you two cases and no results?
Yeah. Interesting. It's interesting. I didn't notice that. You're right.
Why is this whole sugya not create a problem for us in terms of some? Meaning, if because I think we were talking earlier in the year that if today chemically we can tell if a kesem is blood or not blood. So the fact that the Gemara is even talking about, or Rav said earlier that, if it's Efshar Levar, we should be Levar. Why doesn't this also tell us that today, chemically, we could test that the Kesem is blood or not blood, that we don't have that?
No, the testing works for us, not against us, because the din is, even though we know it's blood, we take one look at it, we don't even have to run the test, we know it's blood.
No, I'm not talking about this. You see like something, you see a Mara, and you're not sure, is it blood, is it something else, is it...
If it's medically, physically, biologically blood, but it's still a permissible color, so that's fine. So then we know for a fact that the blood is still mutter, because in order to be ulcer, it has to have a mara of dam. That's a problem with the mara tummy.
So we're not going to say that just even if chemically...
Right, even though... Right. If it shows up, if the test shows up as blood, that's not going to ruin it for us. If the test shows up as nail polish, that'll be good for us. Right. So we can, if we're willing to rely on those tests, then you're right. Okay, so getting back to this story. So we don't have certainty from this Gemara. We don't have clarity from the Sugya about Yom Kippur, because we thought maybe that was just a Kula Pikuach Nefesh. So from the Gemara, we just exhausted all the Gemaras. We don't have any other Gemaras that are going to tell us, do we trust the doctors, do we believe the doctors, do the doctors know what they're talking about or not. So we have to look at the Rishayim a little bit. What did the Rishayim say about this? So in the 8th of the Maram Kamos, so the tour, in your Adayim Tzim Kofay Zayin, so the tour quotes from the Sefer HaTruma, Bein Baruch, one of the Dalai HaTaisis, the Sefer HaTruma. So the Sefer Truma, Shem Tirtzel Lisrapos, Tzricha Shetis Rapi, Kodim Shetis Chazek, Vala'acha Shetis Chazek, Tzorach Iyonim Tuchon Lismach HaRafuah, L'Shamesh HaChakak, Afilu Mirofa Net Mumche. What is the context of the Sefer Truma? It's a sugi we spoke about in the past, about a Roa Dam Machmas Tashmish. If a woman sees blood 3 times in a row, relating to having, to Tashmish, relating to having relations, that creates a very, very serious halachic problem. Because if it happened 3 times in a row, so then it's probably going to happen the 4th time also. So how in the world can we let her have relations with the husband anymore? So the Gemara says we can't. The Gemara says that in theory, if a woman becomes a raw dama kastashmish, she's in a big, big, big pickle. She's in a very, very drastic situation. So Baruch Hashem, that never happens. Because if it happens once, we already look into it and make sure that we clear it up medically. Well, that's what I have to see, how we do clear it up medically. But so Bizman is there, this never really happens. It never happens, it shouldn't happen, to the extent that it happens 3 times in a row. But in theory, on the books, there is such a deed called Ramach Damach Estashmish. So the Torah quotes from the Sefer Truma, but if you have a woman who is starting to see blood Mach Estashmish, can she go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to tell her that, yeah, don't worry about it, we healed it, we fixed it, it's all over, nothing to worry about. Are we going to trust what the doctor's telling us in terms of this? So the Sefer Truma says it depends. If she goes to the doctor before a chazok is established, before it's ascertained, if it happened 3 times in a row, and now the doctor tells her, don't worry about it, everything's fine, everything's cleared up, that's one thing. But if she already was muhzekes, we already decided she's a roda machistash, which happened 3 times, and now she goes back to the doctor examines her and says, yeah, no problem, you're not going to bleed anymore. So says the Sefer Truma, tzorchim? We don't know about that. The doctor gave her a cream, gave her an ointment, gave her a bracha, gave her something, and now the doctor swears that she's not going to bleed anymore from tashmish. Do we have a right to rely on that? So says the Sefer Truma, I'm not sure. It says, even if he's an established doctor, he has a great reputation, but we're not sure that we can assume that the doctor is correct under those circumstances. But the question is, what in the world does that mean? The Sefer Truma is alluding to almost to a halachic distinction, whether there's a chazaka that she already became asura, and the doctor's trying to change that chazaka, or we haven't ascertained it. We don't know anything yet. We haven't established there's a problem yet. We're trying to determine whether there's a problem. So the Sefer Truma is alluding to the fact that somehow when we have a pre-established problem, we are much more weary to rely on the doctor. If we don't know that we have a problem, so then we're willing to trust the doctor a little bit more. What does that mean? What kind of halach is that? So that's almost a throwback to the Gemara in the 10th of the Maram Kamos, the Gemara Masechet Gittin. So the Gemara discusses the principle called Eidecha Nevin Bisurin. In Eidecha, one witness comes and tells us that this food is kosher. One witness comes and tells us a certain piece of information relevant to Issa V'Heter. So do we believe the Eidecha or not? So the Gemara draws the following distinction. When do we say that an eidechad is believed? We have a piece of meat in front of us, and we have no idea, is this meat chelav, which is asati, or is it shumun, which is permissible fat? We have no clue. The low is chazik yisura. So we don't know that we have a problem on our hands, so then an eidechad is believed. When you have a chazaka of a problem, here the Gemara mixes in another issue of eishesish. We're leaving this is beyond the scope right now. But the Gemara says that the principle of erech and bisurin applies when there's no chazaka, when we're not changing a status. I have a piece of meat, I have no idea, yes kosher, no kosher, then an erech is believed. But if I already know something is a problem and the erech wants to change it, that's much more difficult for an erech to change that.
But with someone on a woman.
For what? For
says she's tahar.
Okay, very good. Okay, excellent. Okay. So yeah. I'm trying to avoid that sugya and that vein of says Gittin. So Tosfos asks the kasha. Wait a second. How in the world do we believe when the woman, when she says she went to the mikvah, it's a cheskes iser? So Tosfos writes, no, it's not called the cheskes iser because it's beyond the litvol, because she has the ability to be tovel. When do she have the ability to change the cheskes iser? When do we say a person is not believed, but it's not beyond them to change the cheskes iser? He touched on the Taisus with the Sheikh Shmaitz and with the Tigers, and I'd love to talk about it now, but we have to finish a little Shachas. Get back to the story. So there is a distinction in halacha between a person being believed when there's already a problem, in contrast to a person being believed when the problem hasn't established itself yet. And the Sefer HaTruma just related that to doctors. So the doctors believe, we don't know one way or the other, but once you already know, the doctor wants to change the status, so that's much more problematic. That distinction makes it sound like we're not trusting the doctors. We're not questioning the medical judgment of the doctors. We're questioning the trustworthiness of the doctors. If the question is that we don't think the doctor knows what they're talking about, so then why would that make a difference whether we have a chazaka or not have a chazaka? If the Sefer Truma is conjuring up this image of almost ne'amanus, that an erecha doesn't have ne'amanus against the chazaka. The doctor doesn't have ne'amanus against the chazaka. So this is focusing on the fact that our issue with the doctor is a nemanus issue. It's not so much a competence issue. It's more of a nemanus issue. So that issue is also addressed in the Beis Yosef, in the 9th Inner Ma'amar Kamos, where it's on the third line, so at the end of the third line, the Beis Yosef, where in the 9th Inner Ma'amar Kamos, at the end of the third line, v'char kach kosfu v'shem ritzva, so one of the Balei Tosfos, shim omala rofe shenisrapeis. If a woman already went three times, she had dam. And the doctor, she went to the doctor, don't worry, we healed you. We gave you a good treatment, now you're all good to go. So, v'shemesh es osvach diburo. She can then go back to her husband, relying on what the doctor said. Imu Yisrael, if he's Jewish, if he's a Jewish doctor, what's a Jewish doctor or not a Jewish doctor? Just because he's a Jewish doctor, that means he's a better doctor. That means he's a more competent doctor, no. But it means he's a more trustworthy doctor. Namely, that he has that monos because of an erecha. So a non-Jew doesn't have, a non-Jew comes and tells you the food's kosher, it doesn't mean anything. But the Jew, the frum Jew tells you the food is kosher, it does mean something. So the ritzva here is also emphasizing the fact that we're not so worried about the competency of the doctor, we're worried more about the nemanus, about the trustworthiness of the doctor. That's what the Sefer Truma said, we're questioning the trustworthiness, so that depends, is there a chazaka, is there no chazaka. The Ritva says we're questioning the trustworthiness, so it depends, is he Jewish, is he not Jewish? So the competency of the doctor, we seem to be comfortable with that. So we have a Rofe Mumch, assuming that he has a good reputation, he has a, you know.
What happens if the doctor who's not, you know, Bnei Yisrael, and he's worried about he's going to lose his client?
Okay, we're getting there. So up until now, you know, look at the Gemara, look at the Rishonim, so the competency issue we seem to have overcome, is a quote unquote Rofe Mumch. The Ne'amanus issue, so we can seemingly overcome by just finding a Jewish, if I say Jewish, I mean a from Jewish, but if he's not from, so that he's not sure with our mitzvahs, he tells you the food's kosher. It also doesn't amount to much. So if we have someone who's Ne'aman Bisurin, Echanan Bisurin, he's a from fellow, he himself keeps Taz Mishpacha, we have every reason to believe that he's telling us the truth, so it sounds like we're okay. But it still leaves open, what if he's not from, if he's not Jewish, so what would we say about that? So the issue that Henry is now raising, well, wait a second, maybe there are other factors that can be thrown into this mix to almost hike up the nemanos, even for people who don't usually have nemanos. If the non-Jew tells you, the food is kosher, you can't believe him, but maybe the non-Jewish doctor telling you a piece of medical information is more significant than that. Maybe there are other factors that enable us to trust the non-Jewish doctor, just assuming that he's competent, so assuming he knows what he's talking about, can we really believe that he's telling us the truth? Maybe there are other reasons to believe that we do have a right to rely on them. So this touches on a global question about nemanus of people who per se don't have nemanus. Objectively, they don't have nemanus, but in particular situations arising, we are pretty comfortable that they probably are telling us the truth. There are almost professional reasons to believe that they're telling us the truth. So the question is how far that goes in a chazid, and how far it's going to spread in other areas of halacha as well. So the source of this discussion is on the 12th of the Ma'amar Kavos. The Gemara said, "It's chulin enough to exam and aleph." The Gemara tells us, "Tanya kedeira shabisha ba'basar liyavasha ba'cholah." If you have a pot that you use to cook the meat in, so you're not allowed to use that same pot to cook milk. The imbisha, if by mistake you cook, the nice and tam, and you have to taste the milk that you cook to see does it have a fleshic taste. Is there a little bit of a resin, a little bit of taste of meat in that milk or not? Truma, or if you have a pot that you cook truma in, liyavasha ba'cholah, then you can't cook regular food in it. Bisha, once again, be nice and time. You have to taste the chulin and see is there still a little bit of a taste of truma in it. So the Gemara asks in the Braisa, practically, how can you do that? Bishlama truma, so I understand the case of the truma. Time lakayin, you get a kohen to taste it. So worst case scenario, if he tastes the chulin and he tastes a little bit of truma, big deal, he's allowed to eat truma. Elabasa b'cholah ban toilet, who are you going to ask to taste it? You can't ask a Jew to taste it, because a 50-50 chance whether it's treif, if it turns out, that was a delicious bottle of chol taste, that's not so good. So who are you going to rely on to taste it? So hasha de Rabbi Yechon, it's a b'chila k'feila ramah, b'chinam is a b'china k'feila. So it must be Rabbi Yechon told us in a different context, we're going to rely on a chef, and the chef's going to be an ramah, a non-Jewish chef. So we're going to ask a non-Jewish cook to come and taste the food for us, and he tells us, yeah, tastes okay, I don't taste any meat in there, so we can drink the milk and fine, everything is okay. That's the famous Gemara, we're relying on the Kfeila Ramah, the Goyisha chef. So the question is, where does that come from? What kind of Ramah is that? If a Goy is a Mashpiach in a store, that doesn't work for us. So why, how in the world can we believe the Goy to tell us? So Taishas on the 13th, remember, come and tell us a Pchina Kfeila. Afagab Devi Kechadmu, is that Goy? Came in the Kfeilu lo Meshakesh lo Yafsidum Nasai. It must be that he's not going to lie, because he doesn't want to lose his reputation. He's a professional chef. He's not just a guy off the street. He's a professional cook, professional chef. So if he's going to be called in to taste the food, and he's going to say, I can't taste that thing. There's no meat in this. And then we're going to rely on him, and we're going to, wait a second. That tastes funny. Oh, yeah, that tastes a little bit like meat. So we're going to go and spread rumors. We're going to say, this guy doesn't know anything. Don't go to him anymore to cook your food. He has no stuff. He can't even taste the simple basmati challah. So he's afraid that he's going to lose his reputation. He's going to lose his customers. So that's enough of a reason to believe him. So you see from the way Taisha's Lom Shana's Gemara, Kibbutz is a Shabbat deraisa, which we're relying on that the Goy is telling us, we're going to eat the food, I'll spot the fact that the professional Goyish chef told us that it's kosher, and that's okay. Even though an Erechad Nem Yisurin doesn't apply to a Goy, this is not Erechad Yisurin, this is an unbelievable robe. There's an unbelievable statistical majority that he's telling us the truth. What we call Uman Lomari Nafshe, that an Uman, a professional, is not going to ruin his craft, not going to ruin his reputation. So that, this thesis may be relevant for our discussion as well. If you go to a doctor, there's a Goyish doctor. So the Goy doesn't have Nemonis per se, but if he knows that he's going to test the woman, he's going to tell her, oh yeah, everything's great, no problem. And then he's going to turn out that it's not true. So then she's going to start spreading rumors about him. She's going to start telling other people, don't go to this guy, that's what he's talking about. So the fact that he doesn't want to lose his reputation, he's not going to outright lie to us. So again, we're trusting his competency. As we said before, we assume that he knows what he's talking about. We're just trying to figure out, is he trustworthy to say what he's talking about? So this does may be helpful. So next week we have to pick up from this thesis and see, does everybody agree to this thesis? Does this thesis apply to Zman HaZeh? Are there other reasons for Zman HaZeh? So we'll go from the end of the circuit then. So next week we'll move on to this. We're trusting the combination of things. We're trusting the government to do the job, and then we're relying on the fact that nobody wants to get fined by the government. So yeah, it's a combination of things.